Buongiorno everybody and welcome! Thank you for taking the time and especially finding the dungeon of the Marquis Marriott to come here and spend 1 hour with this heavily accented hippie telling you the tale of the Microsoft identity story for developers. My name is Vittorio Bertocci. There is a lot of echo, so I sound a bit like the Pope. But I'm not the Pope, I am a program manager in the identity division looking after developer experience. Now you might have noticed that within 30 seconds into the talk, I said a developer twice. So the non-developers among you might start to think, maybe this session is for developers. Did I get it right? Right. Build normally is for developers, but identity is traditionally a topic which attracts people with like forests and domains and all these other things that I know very little about. So just for making sure, build is a precious occasion, only once a year. So if you are an administrator and you want to hear about an administrative thing, I think we have 1, 2, 3, 4 exits, and there is an emergency behind me just in case you want to storm the... No, okay. Actually, normally at Build, we do traditionally our presence subdivided in basically training moments. Every time we substantially tell you how to sign in your web application or through your mobile app using the latest technology, which of course is better every time. But that's pretty much the schema. This time, we decided to do something slightly different. You see, we do have a vision of what the ideal identity system for developers look like. And everything we do, everything, is along the lines of getting closer to that vision. However, when you look just at what we are delivering, like for each singular deliverable, you might not actually see the entire picture. So we decided this year to invest 1 hour of your time to tell you about this vision and to connect the dots, show all these various deliverables, how they actually help us to advance toward this vision. There will be code. It will show up later in the session, but there will be code, so be patient. If I think of a way of summarizing what we are actually going after is we want to be the best identity system for all developers. And please don't leave. We mean it, actually. We actually mean it. And I'll be spending the next 15, 20 minutes to actually paint to you what we think is the ideal identity system, what are the salient features that you should expect in such a system. And then, done that, I'll actually walk you through various deliverables, various services, products, and technologies, some that you already know about, some that you'll hear for the first time here, that we actually will hopefully show you how we are trying to aspire to this ideal. How does that sound? Well, you guys make it very easy for me. The bar is pretty low. But I'm sure that I'll manage to screw up. Oops, I said manage. I apologize. Very good. So let's talk about our vision. How does such a mythical system look like? We identified three pillars for this. This system needs to reach the audience that you care about. When you're writing an application and you want to make this application available to a specific user or a category of users, this system must enable you to do so. That's pretty basic. Then we have fundamentals. A system, even for entering your radar, must have certain table stakes. It must be secure. It must be available. It must be geo-replicated. It must be respectful of privacy. It must have a fantastic user experience. So those are all things that if you don't have it, it's kind of not even make sense talking. And finally, given that we are talking about development, whatever system we are talking about has to be not just possible, but easy to integrate in whatever developer stack, whatever application style, whatever operating system you are targeting. So that is substantially what we think would be a pretty good, best identity system for all developers. So let me dig a bit into all of those. First audience, where are all the users? Now, no taxonomy is perfect, of course, but just for giving a map for understanding where to look and how to engage, because that's an important aspect from the authentication perspective, here we subdivided the world in two big categories. The business category, the organizations, so companies, universities, charities, anything which is like a meaningful group of people working together in certain shape or form. And on the other side, we have individuals, people that show up to your application without any specific affiliation. So let's just take a very quick look. On the left side, we start with all the on-premises systems. How many of you guys, when you sign in on an on-premise system? If I harbored any hope to count, of course, many. Whomever is taking notes, many. Thank you. And among those, without false modesty, I can say that a large, large amount will be Active Directory. Now, this will be a good point for me to tell you that those circles are not to scale. It's more for showing what intersects with what. Those are not to scale. If those would be to scale, I'd be pretty modest, because Active Directory actually has even more coverage. Now, among all those on-prem systems, you have systems that are capable of federation. Now, this is a very important capability because it indicates one way in which you can authenticate users. So some systems have ADFS, some other system will have equivalent system, but it's an important portion of the on-prem situation. And then finally, we have systems that have their presence in the cloud. And here you can have both systems that are cloud-only, cloud-native. So the user store, the user structure, the directory only lives in the cloud. And then you'll have hybrid systems in which the part in the cloud is a projection or somehow something which is coupled with the thing that you have on-prem. So this is by no means exhaustive, but I think it gets pretty close. And if you guys think that I missed some categories, please let's meet afterwards and let me know. Now let's take a look on the individual side of the house. How many of you guys have a Facebook account? How many guys are lying right now? A good half of the room didn't raise their hand. So I'm a big oversharer on Facebook. I know I shouldn't do it, but. So large part of the population on the Western world today is available in some form or fashion on social networks, which is, of course, a very important source of users. Among the social networks, there are some of them that actually support open standards for signing in. And here I'm saying OpenID Connect because this is today's golden standard of signing in mechanism, but in reality, just substitute it to whatever sign-in standard is at the moment. So there is this category of providers that you can connect to just by knowing the protocol without writing special code for them. Then there is yet another category, which I like to call the emerging identity providers. Those are exceptionally successful applications that are so successful at what we are doing that sign-in with name of the application starts making sense. How many of you guys now sign in on applications with your GitHub account? Okay, now I have to ask. How many of you guys have a Visual Studio installed on your machine? And how many of you use it at least once a day? Okay, you didn't lie when you said that you're a developer. Very good. Okay, well, anyway, here, let's not get too stuck on the specific applications. The point is there is an intermediate state in which there are applications that are so successful that they are on the verge of becoming identity providers. In the case of GitHub, I think that I could have put it already in the mainstream, but it's just for making a point. And then finally, here, there is the counterpart of what astronomers like to call the dark matter. There is so much stuff in the universe. We know it's there. Otherwise, the universe would be expanding much faster, but we can't see it. And in the identity world, the equivalent are what we call local accounts. Those are substantially databases of users that live local to the application. They exist, they are important, and they often become emerging IDPs and then eventually full-fledged IDPs, but they are difficult to reach. They exist, but there is no clear-cut method for talking to those identity stores. Now, we care about all of those. For some of them, we already have great solutions today. For others, we are still working on those, but we care about all of those, and you can expect eventually to address all of those categories. Now, fundamentals. Fundamentals is something which is very often misunderstood. When you are in a small operation, or when you think that you are not liable for a lot of, for a lot of value, you might be tempted to go for homebrew solutions or just like do your own local instance and similar. And those things appear to be working, but as soon as your scale change, as soon as the value that you are protecting rises and you become a target, a potential target, then clearly you need to get to something more substantial. You need to get to something that has certain security guarantees, that has certain scale guarantees, that has certain process and certification guarantees. So clearly a different level. And we believe that the ideal identity system should offer all of those strong fundamentals. It should be absolutely secure, and it should show that its security evolves. I'm sure that you heard all the various high-profile breaches and attacks that happened in the last year. Clearly, I don't think anybody wants to be in the news in that way. So whatever system you rely upon has to protect you with that and show you that it constantly updates its security levels so that in the arms race with the bad guys, it stays one step ahead. Of course, you need scale. And even if your operation is not big today, one always hopes it will be big tomorrow. And in general, you want the kind of availability that you have in the same way in which you open your faucet and water comes out, as opposed to you having to deal with bringing water to your house. Here, the analogy of a platform as a service applies as well. Of course, privacy is super, super important. There are certain competitors of ours that every time you authenticate with them, somehow will take your data on a nice round trip to California and then back to wherever your application is. Well, we believe that the ideal identity system would allow you to actually have sovereign clouds, which means I'm putting stuff in the cloud, so I don't care about location, patching, all of that stuff, but I want guarantees that that stuff stays within my natural boundaries or whatever boundaries my normative imposes to me. So we believe that this is a foundational capability. And then, of course, all these blubber would be just blubber if whatever output would not be affordable to you. This thing needs to be priced not only reasonably, it has to be actually a very practical alternative. So fundamentals. Did I mention fundamentals? Finally, last pillar. This has to work fantastic with your solution. What does that mean? Say that you have applications on the server side. Say that you have mobile applications accessing this thing. And say that we put our little system in the middle. Now, what does it mean that it works great with your solution? Well, the bare minimum is that this system has to be based on open protocols. If you invent a platform and you start using it and nobody else knows about it, of course, you cannot expect to have any artifact on that thing yet. But if the system that you connect to supports open protocols, then you know that there is a baseline level that you can work with for actually getting the services out. So the use of open protocols allows for that. And of course, it also allows you to grab off-the-shelf components that are already designed for that protocol. However, how many of you guys ever read the threat model of OAuth and OpenID Connect documents? 1, 2, 3, I know, guys, I know. Also, my weekends, I don't know what to do, so that's what I do. Well, for everybody else, that stuff is like over 70 pages in the good cases of a really, really obscure language, which is full of references. And so it's not a nice read. And if you operate at the protocol level and if you want to be secure, you better read that thing, understand it, and apply it. Of course, apart from the few bunch of these guys, and let's go to have a beer afterwards. Like, clearly, we are similar-minded. But for everybody else that you don't want to spend that time learning the protocol at that level, the system that is ideal would offer you components which already enshrine in their own logic all of those good practices and will substantially automatically make you, what we say, fall into the pit of success. As in, you are using this thing which has been already tested and designed by security experts, So you don't need to take on the burden of doing these things. So very important to have a good artifacts and components. Then, of course, we always think about authentication because it's the thing that every user experiences. But just as important, there is the life cycle and management. You need to be able to put users in the system. You need to maintain the life cycle of their attributes, forgotten passwords, all these kind of things. And possibly, you might want to also have insights on how the user sign in, how they sign out, if they sometime come from an odd place, or how they relate to others. So in general, you need, in an ideal system, a solid API or a solid management mechanism which will allow you to do all of this. And then finally, of course, your end users must have a really good experience. So whatever experience comes by default out of this system has to be good for your developer. But here comes the catch. The default doesn't work for everybody as usual. So an ideal system would also offer you fine-grained customization, so that if you don't like the default, which is viable, but if you don't like it, you should have a freedom to change all of that. So that's pretty much what we mean by works great with your solution. Now, I guess that what I'm really saying is that we want a fantastic service which works with any application and any stack and any iOS, which can touch and connect to organizations and can also authenticate individual users, no matter where they live. So this picture, which might not be exactly Italian art, but it's substantially this umbrella which covers all the things that we want to achieve. So that's where we want to go. Now, how do we actually get there? So now let me actually walk you through various things we've been doing in the space of identity and developers, and actually show you how these things go toward that ideal. On-premises Active Directory. This thing has been around since 99. It's been powering an enormous amount of on-prem directories. We've basically seen it all in all these years. We secured from like the small operation to the military complex. We evolved with the industry. The very first version of Active Directory didn't have a multiple authentication factor. And of course, today you have multiple options. So it's a very solid choice, which remains perfectly viable for all your on-prem scenarios. Like, you don't have to move to the cloud if your system is specifically taking advantage of on-prem. And the idea is that whatever application you deploy within the boundaries of your enterprise will magically get identity information, because the sheer fact that your application lives on the directory means that on the network, I'm sorry, that means that the application authenticated with the domain controller, that means that whomever attempts to access also authenticated, and so you just get all these identity information for free. Well, for free. You are piggybacking on the work of the administrator, but of course, that's their job, so what can we do? Now, in recent years, we also introduced, again, answering the call of the market, a new capability which we call ADFS, Active Directory Federation Services, which substantially teaches to your domain controller to speak federation protocols. Those federation protocols allow you to authenticate users or calls that come outside of your network. So those could be your partners, those could be your own users working from home. How many of you guys ever heard the term ADFS before? Pretty much everybody. That's fantastic. I feel like I'm home. Very good. Now, what happens when you take this happy picture that I just drawn, and let me get to my toys here. And when you take this application and you move it to the cloud. A few years ago here, I would have said, because you believed our marketing team, and then you move it to the cloud. But today, I don't need to say it, because finally, it's completely mainstream. People fully understand that using the cloud is just like advantages. Like, it costs less, it's more agile, you can do it from wherever, you can access the application everywhere, you have infinite scale, you have security, blah, 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 blah. You know all of that. So I don't need to convince you that going to the cloud is a good thing. But As usual, when you take this thing and bring it outside of the boundary of your enterprise, what happens? You lose the ability of authenticating users via Kerberos. But as I just said, you have this guy, which represents ADFS, and these allow you, when you're moving your own applications for server consolidation or similar in the cloud, to actually still authenticate your users. But there is one thing that you still cannot do just using Federation and ADFS, and that thing is querying back the directory. Very often, those applications need to know more about the current user. They need to know more about your organizational structure, because they need to know who is the manager of whom, which group governs a certain set of teams and similar. So those are all things that you cannot do via Federation. But luckily, you can actually do using another trick that I'll tell you in a moment. Also here, there is another aspect which comes into play if your living is done by selling software to other organizations. If here you have other organizations and you want to make this guy available to all of them, then you have another problem. Using ADFS or equivalent technology for Federation is perfectly possible. However, it's not something that you can streamline because everybody deals with their own installation in a different way. So you'd have to every time negotiate with your customer. And that's a problem because if you have aspirations to have many tens of thousands, many hundreds of thousands of customers, then that cannot be done. It simply cannot scale to that. And I talk about this from a place of knowledge, mostly because Microsoft itself went through this experience when we decided to start selling Office as a subscription software. We had exactly the same problem. Like, how do we achieve the same level of integration that customers are used to have with their on-premise version of Exchange, SharePoint, and friends? So how did we do that? Any takers? AD. I hear a lot of A followed by D. And that's a very good answer. Ta-da. Excellent. What we did was we reimagined Azure Active Directory as a cloud service, which started originally as intention, as a way of supporting our Office 365 effort, but in fact evolved very, very quickly into a general purpose identity as a service, platform service, which you can use for outsourcing authentication and for outsourcing directory management for cloud-based workloads. The idea is that you have a component which runs on premises and periodically grabs a subset of information about your users, groups, and similar, not credentials, unless you decided to do so, and projects them in the cloud. And then it makes those credentials available, like it makes the ability of authenticating available through protocol endpoints, so that if you want to authenticate your users on cloud-based workloads, you can take advantage of those endpoints, so SAML if you have existing systems, AWS Federation if you have existing systems, OAuth and OpenID Connect for more modern workloads, which allow you to just authenticate users directly in the cloud. One big advantage of doing so through a broker, like this case, is that every single directory has a normalized appearance in the cloud. So the ability of provisioning your own applications in your customers' organizations becomes just a matter of somebody clicking OK on a consent screen as opposed to you having to talk with an administrator. Super powerful. The other thing that happens on the cloud is that we actually expose an endpoint for managing your directory. So for creating users, moving users in groups, doing anything that you would do with users, groups, applications, but with a highly granular service. Like this is an OAuth secured endpoint, which allow applications that use Azure Active Directory to access the directory on your own terms. Let's say that the directory in the cloud has a list of very granular permissions, and your customer can have very precise control over what your application can do. And as a result, the bar for them to acquire it is much lower. And this is possible because we use, of course, OAuth, which is an authorization protocol, whereas if, for example, we would have just brought up LDAP in the cloud, that would not have been as easy because LDAP is kind of like all or nothing. How many of you guys know what is LDAP? Uh-huh, so you are also administrators. Okay, how many hats do you wear? Okay, so let's talk about fundamentals, one of the parameters that we said for Azure Active Directory. Azure Active Directory is based on Azure, and it takes advantage of all the great features and capabilities that Azure offers. So here you see a map of our regions, but even more impressive, unfortunately I couldn't find an image of it, is the number of our data centers. We have 30 data centers, 22 in production and 8 announced, and that's more than our two next competitors combined. So in terms of scale, in terms of geo availability, you are pretty well covered. But probably the thing that I find the most interesting is actually the security fundamentals that you get with Azure Active Directory. There are things that you cannot do on-premise, and I'll make you a couple of examples that only Azure Active Directory can do. For example, if one of your users tries to authenticate from an IP that the Microsoft Digital Crime Unit recognizes as belonging to a bot of infected machines, the system will warn you, will actually tell you, hey, there's a request coming from a bot of infected machines, which you cannot do if you don't have access to that kind of information. Or even more spectacular, if somebody is signing in using credentials that are actually being sold on the black market, another thing that our digital crime unit looks after, again, you get a warning saying, hey, beware, your employee lost its password in a way or another. So those are really great things that show how leveraging a service actually allow you to have like this evolving protection. The code is coming, I promise. It's coming. Of course, we already talked about scale, we talked about Azure application. For sovereign clouds, you probably already know that we have specific clouds for Germany and for China, in which you can actually deploy your application there and be certain that you can actually have all the operations take place within those boundaries. Again, no round trip to California and back. Everything in the region. We have this nice feature in which you can get devices that normally you could not join to the domain, but still have a control over what's possible with those devices, which is a great, great thing. My phone is an iPhone. So thanks to this feature, I can actually access my email even if I cannot join the domain network. And my IT still has control so that if I lose the phone on some taxi somewhere, let's hope not, the wife would kill me. But also the administrator would not kill me because he can actually kill the content of the phone remotely. And of course, all of the developer features are actually free. You can actually use those features without paying a dime. You just go on Azure, you subscribe for a free tier, for a free trial, sorry, and then you just use all those features, and even when the trial expires substantially, if as long as you don't use any other feature, you can keep using Azure AD, which is pretty neat. So fundamentals is, I believe, one of the areas where we are the strongest today. And we are actually not that bad also for getting into your solution. Of course, we use open protocols, as I mentioned, but we also give you a lot of libraries that cover a very large number of platforms. I'm sure that you recognize one of the icons of a system that you use if you are developing mobile applications. We have pretty much a library for all of them, and we are actively maintaining it. And what's best, all those libraries are on GitHub. So if one weekend you are not reading security specs, feel free to contribute features to our libraries. That already happened in the past, believe it or not. We had features contributed from the community. And it's a great way of working and guaranteeing that those libraries do what you want them to do. So that's very nice. And of course, we do the same also on the server side. On the server side, we have also open source libraries. And in fact, here we even work within the context of existing frameworks. For example, in the context of Ruby, we have our OmniAuth strategy, which plugs just in there. In the context of Node.js, there is a Passport.js and Express, and we just work right in there. Like, we try to be the, how to say, good citizens of the platform that we go. There is no, how to say, bringing Windows around. We adapt to where we find. And then, of course, we have a very deep Visual Studio integration. If you go in Visual Studio and you create a new ASP.NET app, you actually have an option to say, I want to use Azure AD. And Visual Studio will automatically provision an application in Azure, also in Azure AD, and then you'll just be able to hit F5, and this application will be already working with Azure AD. The same goes with right-click, take an existing app and enable Azure AD, or if you wanted to connect it to Office, which requires you to get the token from AD, all of those things are in Visual Studio. If you are deploying things in Azure, you might have heard of this easy off feature. It's basically a checkbox which says, I want to use Azure AD. That checkbox is all you have to do. Your application doesn't need to have any security code, and it will just activate Azure AD. So very tight integration with our development system. And of course, tokens from Azure AD are a very widely accepted currency. In fact, if you want to call Microsoft APIs, you kind of have to get the token from Azure AD. It's the only currency we accept. So very useful for that in that respect as well. And now here, I would have a demo in which I would show you how to do this with Visual Studio, but I've done this demo a number of times, and I don't have a lot of time, so I will skip it. If you are dying to see that demo, I will be, for the rest of the week, chained to the booth. I will not be able to go more than 12 feet from it. So you can come in there and brutalize me and ask me things I will not be able to escape. I'm lying. I already have my escape path. So we have seen how we moved the scope. We moved from on-prem to moving applications to the cloud for organizations. But what if I don't want to, talk to organizations, but I want to talk to individuals, like those guys? Or, as I mentioned, what if I actually want to have like a deeper relationship with my users and actually deal with local accounts as opposed to deal with users coming from social providers? How can I do that? Well, somebody wants to guess what we did next? Here, B2C, B2C. Yes, B2C, exactly. Excellent. If it would be just one of them, then I could tell you, huh, you won a book, and I'd give you a book. But if you all whisper, then I don't have as many books as you guys. So next time I ask a question, if you are very assertive, you might actually get a book. All right, correct. Azure B2C. Azure B2C is our next step toward expanding our scope and allowing you to reach larger and larger audiences. And in particular, this is a system which leverages the same infrastructure that we have with Azure AD, which is already in place and is already designed for scale. So that allows us to give to you a service which is extremely scalable, it's extremely available, and it's cheap because we have all the infrastructure in there. And cheap here means doesn't cost much. It's not a good system. Okay. From time to time, I have to be careful because there are certain words in Italian that kind of map to English, but not as much. Like, for example, once I said egregios. In Italian, egregio means fantastic, but in English, egregios kind of means a bad thing. And I blogged about it, saying, yeah, my egregios colleague, X. And luckily, that guy was like a good sport and understood that it wasn't a bad intention. But since then, I'm very careful. Also, I think that my management is in the room, so that's also why I'm very careful with my jokes. Normally, I'd be more funny. So I apologize. And it's all your fault that you're in the room. So not only we expanded with B2C the scope to touch more audiences, and also very recently, we added MSA. You might have noticed here, we didn't have MSA in B2C, and now we have it. But not only that, we also have more features that go toward the fundamentals. So for example, when you use Azure Active Directory today, your options for customizing the authentication UI are somewhat constrained. Whereas when you go in B2C, in fact, you are still using our infrastructure, like the authentication pages run on our servers. So you get all the protections that I described earlier, you get the scale, you get the availability, but you have a chance of injecting your own CSS, which means that you can make the authentication experience look like whatever you want. And I say white label because people might go through that thing and never even realize that Microsoft is involved. So more capabilities for you to manipulate the experience. And of course, we have this thing that I just said about the local accounts, which is a great, great feature. Because again, I know developers. Like, even if my title is PM, I spend a lot of time doing my own apps in my own time. And I know that it's fun to write your little things from scratch, also because you see how it works and similar. But trust me, doing these for authentication is such an incredibly bad idea. It takes a long time, and it's brittle, and it's when something goes south, it's a huge, huge problem. I cannot say the expression that came to mind, because I think I'm being recorded. But it's really, really bad. And when you have such a service in which you can rely upon, then basically you are like relying on something which gives you guarantees that writing your own code or even hosting your own component in your own area, it's simply something that cannot reach to the same level. Not even speaking about the fact that when you use such a service, if you need to tomorrow raise the profile, like say that you add something premium and you want to add a multi-authentication factor for a certain subset of your users, it's going to be really hard for you to code that thing. Whereas in here, there is a little checkbox. Done. Now for those users, I'll use MFA. So don't discount the ability of using a cloud-based service, even for things like local accounts. And of course, I'm not even mentioning things like user lose the password, so dealing with all of that. So here, it's all automated. OK. On-prem cloud for organization, cloud for individuals. What happens if I want both? Do I have a picture of this? Do I? Maybe I do. Say that I want organizations, but I also want individuals. How many of you guys ever used the MSA, new name of Live ID, for protecting an application? Some. OK. So we didn't historically promote using MSA as something that you can use for authenticating to a different applications, to your own applications, but it was always possible. And doing that, if say that you have an application like the one that I just described, in which you want to deal with both individual users and organizational users, then you'd have actually to use two portals for registering your applications. Two protocol stacks, because the dialect of the protocol that the system used was different. Two developer stacks, because the libraries for dealing with those were different. So if you follow the sum of Microsoft Graph talks or the Office Graph and similar, you have seen that Office and the Microsoft Graph moved into the situation in which you have exact same APIs, whether you are an individual and whether you are an organization. So having to do everything twice just for the authentication would be pretty bad, which is why, ta-da, we recently unified the two services. So we now have a programmatic interface which wraps both. For the time being, it's a proxy. You hit those endpoints normalize the protocol that the system are using, and in reality, you are actually hitting two different backends. But then the result is the same. So from the programmatic perspective, your application has exactly the same experience. And in fact, these allow us to have one of each instead of two of each, which streamlines the experience greatly. And I hope you'll see in a second how much simpler things look like. Given that we were there, we threw in a couple of extra incremental improvements. One is the fact that we use the protocol in more standard fashion. When we first adopted OAuth and OpenID Connect, we had to deal with the fact that the people who did the protocol substantially enshrined the practices that would happen on the public web for individual users. So there isn't a lot in the service which allow you to do things like, OK, here I have one organization, and here I have another organization. And those two have the same hierarchy, but they are separate. They are two different entities. And all the resources that I define for those two are associated to two different subsets. There was nothing in the protocol to do that. So we added extensions for simulating those things. And through the last 2-3 years of working with you guys and working with customers and similar, we have learned of ways of achieving the same effect without extending the protocol. So then the result is that now we can actually do that, give you those capabilities, but in a very protocol compliant way. So that you can take any open source library that talk off in OpenID and just connect to the new endpoint. The other one is that before you had to define in advance all the things that you wanted your application to be able to do. And instead now you can ask for those things on the fly, which is pretty nice. Thank you. Thank you. Very good. Now, in the last few months, the team has been hard at work to take what we have learned with our client libraries, what we call Active Directory Authentication Libraries, ADAL, and actually take everything good that we learned in there, take all the things that were difficult, and somehow create this new library, which is designed to work with all of the new services that you heard. So the converged Azure AD and MSA and B2C. So now you have one library that you can use for doing everything. Pretty good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Now, this library, again, all the people that used it so far say that it's kind of like using a DAL, but with like lighter clothes. Like it's easier to use, but more or less the primitives are the same. If you want to talk to ADFS or to the vcurrent or the old endpoint of Azure AD, you still want to use ADAL, which, by the way, we are this close from GAing. We were going to announce availability today, but we couldn't agree on where to save the samples. It's a true story. And so we are going to GA next week, or at least if we manage to actually agree on where to put that stuff. But like we are this close. And ADAL is not deprecated. You still use it if you want to do things like getting tokens for Azure and similar. MSAL is not like a DAL protocol library. So if you know the protocol, you might recognize some of the name of the parameters, but you do not need to know the protocol. We substantially support scenarios, so very easy to use. Before ADAL was wrapped around the idea of directory, first thing you would decide would be, I want to work with this directory. This didn't work very well with multi-tenant apps in which you don't know in advance which directory. And here, even worse, because you don't know which directory or if you want to use MSA. So we changed that. The thing that we released today is a preview for .NET, so, which means that you can do desktop applications, you can do code behind of ASP.NET, including in NetCore. You can use Xamarin for iOS and Android, and universal apps, of course. And soon we'll just keep up and come out also with other platforms, pretty much all the other platforms that we have with ADAL, so native iOS, native Android, and so on and so forth. So now let's take a super quick look at how to do a native app. For MSAL, we changed, as I mentioned, the pivot. So the pivot is on the application. That's the simplest program you can write with MSAL. And in theory, I should be able to shut up and you just look at it and you understand what it does. But of course, they pay me for talking, so I will not do that. The first line is creating your application. The only parameter I'm passing is the identifier of my app. The second call is dear application, give me a token for those scopes. As simple as that. Very simple, very straightforward. And in those two lines, we do pretty much everything you need. We show the right UI depending on the platform where you are running. So if you are on Android, or on iOS, or Universal, or desktop, we'll show the right UI. We'll craft the protocols, and we'll do all the validations that need to be done directly in the library. And last but not least, we will manage the session for you. We'll save tokens, we'll transparently refresh tokens. So we'll basically just maintain the session so that your user doesn't have to be prompted often. Like, in fact, is prompted as little as possible. And now, I'm going to do something extremely dangerous, which is coding on stage. It's such a bad idea, and I'm doing it anyway. So here, for showing you that this is truly very easy, I'm starting from exactly nothing. I'll start from a blank app, which I'll call ominously build 2016 app. It's a universal app. I could do Xamarin, but too much work. Well, not much more work, but again, I'm on stage. So I'm doing something very simple. And normally I keep 3,000 by 2,000, so now it looks like I'm playing with blocks. It's an enormous screen, so I hope you'll forgive me if I get it. Can you still read? Yes, no, yes, thank you, excellent. Okay, so in the spirit of from scratch, I'll adding everything, including the UI, which of course won't be very elaborated, but. So we want a button, and we want to call it click me, and we want a method for it, new. And the content will be click me, exclamation point, to entice the user. Horizontal alignment, we want it on the center, and vertical alignment, also on the center. And voila, we have our fantastic Italian design UI. And you cannot deny that, I'm Italian, come on. Very good. So now, I want this application to get the tokens from Azure AD or MSA using the converged endpoint. So the first thing I should have done should have been to go to our fantastic, which I no longer have a link for because of, hey, look at this. I was saying our fantastic new converged application registration. I can go here without any Azure subscription. Like if you have an MSA, you can hit this thing and add applications. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to add an application. I'm going to use the same name because I'm told it's a good idea. And this thing is going to be pretty straightforward. Here I have a new application. I have an identifier here. I can add whatever things I want this application to do. It can be a web application. It can be a mobile application. It can be both. It's a universal app, so we want the mobile application. And then here, I always forget it. There is a save button. You have to click it. And OK, so that's it. I don't have to do anything else. So let me copy this guy, because that's the identifier of my application that I need in my code. So now I'm in my application. Let me go to NuGet and add our wonderful library. Well, wonderful, our library. Of course, who knows what I am agreeing to? I know, right? You do that as well. Click, and what happened? And now the NuGet likes to make things more suspenseful. So now you can see it, but I'm clicking. And somehow it decided it's in a transaction. So commit, prepare. Voila. OK, so now I have my reference. So let's do the same thing that I said earlier. First, let's define what I want to do with this app. Here, I give you two choices. I can grab user information, or I can read the user email. What do you want me to do? Email, very good. Email always makes me a bit nervous because sometimes you get spam. Sometimes the spam is not appropriate to be shown on the screen. But I'm going to risk it and let's see what happens. So here, let's start with the public client application. And if I didn't misspell it, voila, Visual Studio is fantastic. PCA, new, public client application, and here I have a client ID, which I copied from the screen. Okay, so you guys selected mail, so the scope that I need to ask for, scopes is easy enough, mail.read. This is what my application has to ask for. And then here, like every developer, I only now remember that it has to be async. And then I want the token back. So there is this construct which we call authentication result, which contains everything that comes back, including the token I need to use for making my call. So let me await for my app. to give me a token. I'm using the method which will show UI. There is also a method which doesn't. So now I have my token, and I have to use it. In theory, if I'd want to just give a demo of MSAL, that will be the demo. But of course, you want to see it work, right? So now I have to write a lot more code. So let me add an HTTP client. Hot client, sure. Your city is great, but if you misspell stuff, it's unforgiving. Client, new HTTP client. Now we want a request. HTTP request message, message, new message, and we want to do a get. Better not change anything for the time being. And here we need to put the address of API. So this is where I'm going to send this stuff. And I'm notoriously spacey, but this thing is so easy that I actually remember it. So graph.microsoft.com is the root of all of our new APIs. The one, me, I remember because I'm egocentric, and messages. This is what we want. Now, in order to call this thing, wait, something happened here. What happened? This is unacceptable. Come back. I'm sorry, but I am superstitious. So everything must be exactly there. Oh, good. Perfect. Now, if I just send this message, what would happen? I'd get a 401 saying, who are you and why are you asking for my messages? So what I need to do is to go into the headers collection of this guy and the authorization header. I know, is that HTTP call instead of authorization, even if it's authentication. And here I have to create a new header. If you are familiar with auth, you know that the header needs to start with bearer. And here I have my result that I got from my app, token, token. Okay, so now we can finally send the message. So HTTP response message, response, we want to await client dot, wait a minute, client dot send sync message. This is why it's good to give good names. Okay, now I'm gonna do something horrible, so kids don't do that at home. I'm going to new a message dialog. And without any error check, I'm just await my response.content.read a string. And then I'm just going to show it. I know. It's very ugly, but. I have just like 7 minutes left, so. And now I'm just hitting F5. And if it compiles, I already consider this to be checkmark. Look at this enormous application. Now, and what's gonna happen? I'm gonna click on this thing, and I'm going to be prompted for credentials. Now, ignore all that stuff. Today, I want to be Mario. And this is my super secret password, which you'll probably know by the end of the session. So what happens here is that I'm asked if I want to give consent to a number of permissions, including they read your mail, which is the one that I'm going to use. So I'm going to click accept. And this guy is going to think about it for a second. And then I predict there will be an enormous dialogue. Exactly. OK, it's not very well formatted, but as you can see here, it's a mail. It's a mail which is telling me, well, I tried to send a mail to this recipient and it didn't work, but it's a mail. Very good. So now let me try to do the same without even stopping with an MSA. Let's see, appdev 46. And now here I'm being brought by the proxy back to the MSA authentication. Let's hope I remember the password. And here you can see, again, the moral equivalent of consent experience, but on the level this side. Eventually, all these will be perfectly unified, same look and feel. And here we have our beautiful Helvetican Weave Ultralight, which I guess is the font that we must use for their default mail. So it was a very simple demo, but that was the entire point of making it very simple. Because like, in just a few lines of code, which miraculously I wrote on a stage without actually getting it wrong, I was able to call the same API using an MSA and using an Azure AD. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And now, just for giving you a quick feel of this, I'd like to show an app which you can find on GitHub. It's one of the samples that we published today, which uses MSAL and Xamarin for creating a client for a B2C application. So you can see the solution here, in which I have one portable solution, and then you have, I have one version for Android, one version for iOS, and one universal app. And given that this guy takes some time to wake up, I'm going to start it here. And so as it starts the virtual machine, I'll actually show you the same on the Mac. Start virtual machine. Here we come to the Mac. Is it showing it? Yes, very good. So here there is something which to me is akin to magic, Xamarin Studio. It's something that runs on the Mac and can actually compile and execute C#. It's fantastic. It's really nice. What you see in here is the solution which I got that I just showed you in Visual Studio, which I copied on my Mac through GitHub, and then I deleted all the various things that I didn't want to show you, namely everything but iOS and the portable class. And here I have exactly the same code. So let me hit the debug button, and let's see our B2C application running on iOS. Come on, I said that you are going to be fast. Don't make a liar out of me. In fact, here, our good friend in Android is already up. Now, come on, that should make you... Could not find the simulator runtime. That's not a good sign. What's happening? The demo gods are punishing me because I did everything. I live coded, and this thing that always worked with no problem. Oh, come on. Come on. I don't want to check for updates. Well, that's unfortunate, but I don't have a lot of time, so I'm afraid I might have to actually... Yeah, I have to accept the fact that the Mac doesn't like me and go back on this other side. Sorry, guys. Again, I can bring it and give you a private demo. I promise it worked 5 minutes before the session. But luckily here, there is our very dependable Android. Very dependable Android. And here, you can see a very simple UI. You would have seen exactly the same UI, but in white, because it's iOS, it's so white. And you can see, as you can see, I'm a bit bitter right now. And here we have this button, sign in or sign up, which is a special policy that we have in B2C, which allow you to substantially have in one single gesture both the sign in and the sign out. Here, I didn't customize at all the UI. This is the default UI. And here I can both sign in with my Facebook app or one Google Plus app, or I can use a local account, which is what I'm going to do. Here, there is my email. And now, unfortunately, I have to show you again my failure here as I type my password. I hope none of you have seizures when you see stuff flashing. And once I hit sign in, basically, I'm just brought up with a token that I get from my B2C, and I'm using it for calling an Azure API, which I haven't been calling for a long time, so it will not be very responsive. So now, behind the scenes is going and grabbing a list of things from this API that was protected by this token that I got from B2C. So here they are. Here I can also add another one. Of course, I have a breakpoint, but it's useless. I said it's useless. and very good. So very easy. Okay, and as usual, I blabbered too long. So unfortunately, I will not be showing you the web case, but the web case is very similar. Here, I would have shown you the fact that we use the same OpenID Connect libraries that we already had before. It's simply we are passing slightly different parameters. And I may say yellow works just as well. And we have an example which shows you to how to use the incremental off. So in the web app, it shows you how you can initially agree to see the mail, and then later on, if a user chooses to actually incrementally get the mail read, which is pretty nice. And now, let me get back in here. And my hope is that in this session, you have seen where we want to go, which is basically reaching this level of ubiquity, and do so with great fundamentals and being dovetailing perfectly well with your applications. And I hope that you have seen how all the things that we've been doing until now are all aiming in this direction. We have a plan, and that's where we are going. In fact, like we are on this journey to create the best identity system for all developers. And we hope you will join us. Thank you. Thank you.